Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. Sorry we're late. I totally messed this up. Hang on, we'll have George Dixon online. Hello, George, are you with us?
Yeah, how you doing, Leo?
George, I am so sorry that I'm late to go in here. I messed this up so badly tonight. I'm sorry. So how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Leo.
Oh, good.
I hope you're doing okay.
Doing very well as well. Yes. And unfortunately, I had a couple of tequilas this evening, and didn't realize that I had a show.
What is that? Is that a new drink or something? Tequila?
Well, it is extremely irresponsible of me. I'm sorry about that. I did not realize. I thought we were off tonight. And
how do you like that? Yeah.
Isn't that ridiculous? Yep. Sick. I'm sorry, George. But thank you for letting us know.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you what. You know, there's another drink I don't know if you've heard of lately. It's called, you know, the Gulf of Mexico Goo.
Very, very tasty. Hey, you know, I wanted to talk to you about...
That's terrible.
Because I was totally flabbergasted when I read this. I was totally beside myself after I read the book. And I've been reading... I finished it the other day. And
Book is that, Leo?
I read it the other night. I read it on last night, actually. The Bringers of the Dawn, the Teaching from the Palladians.
Oh, yes. Okay. Uh-huh.
George, I you know, that book I borrowed from you, and I swear to God, it was the most remarkable book that I've read. Also, the book on the third eye, Finding the Third Eye, those two books have actually transformed my life. I couldn't believe how remarkable those two books are.
There you have it, Leo.
Yeah, I was totally thrown by them in the sense that I didn't realize the I never thought really of the Palladian connection I really don't know, but I was totally amazed at that book, George. And thank you for lending it to me. And I have to advise everybody to get a copy of it. It's called The Bringers of the Dawn, Teachings from the Palladians by Barbara Marciniak, who channeled Palladians. A remarkable book, George.
Right. There's a website you can go to with Barbara's work. And,
does she have more,
you know,
more channeling from the Palladians?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I believe a lot more work, but I ran across her work years ago, and let's explain to the audience, if there's anybody out there tonight, what Leo is referring to is books that I have in my library, and I just moved up from Long Island. I moved off the island about a little over a year ago, and now what I'm doing is... I'm starting to unpack a lot of my library.
You are really? you got thousands of books there, George.
These are specialized books. Just like I have over 50 books just on the pyramid alone. You know, the different books and journals and a collective work that was done, you know, in researching them. And, you know, that's just part of... Part of my library, along with the field that you looked at, deals with UFOs and extraterrestrials. And I have an extended library in that, probably about 80 books.
By these books, that these last two books that I've got, I think I borrowed 10 from you in the last trip I went up there, but. But these two are absolutely remarkable, only because
Well, tell George you ran into someone who read the same one that you were reading 2 years ago.
George.
Hi, Lila.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm doing fine, dear. And you sound a little better than the last time I talked with you.
Oh, I am. I'm much better, ever so much better. Thank you.
Yes.
Oddly enough, I was so surprised because I work at I teach at the school, a high school, and two people came up to me and two teachers came up and commented on my reading that book because they had read the book already. Two people had read that book, and that was published in 1992. Okay, and it was The Teachings of the Pleiadians. All right, and channel text, and I was like, I was floored, you know,
You know what it is, Leo. This stuff has been around for quite a while, and you know, a lot of people refer to the New Age stuff.
Right.
You know, but it's more than that.
This was before the New Age, actually.
No.
Yeah. 1992.
They had New Age stuff out in the late 80s, Leo.
Yeah, but you know, that started, I think, with Gene Dixon. You know, back with Nixon, you know, in the late 60s and 70s. But you also had Edgar Cayce's work published, and a few of his, I think, secretaries that worked with him, Roberts, I believe, was worked with Cayce. And she talked about walk-ins, but also talked about the esoteric connections with the aliens.
Oh, okay. Because I'll tell you quite honestly, back in, might have been early 92, might have been around 92, I was invited to a Halloween party, a New Age Halloween party. And I had met this, the lady who invited me was a hypnotherapist. But she was also a channeler of an entity, all right. And I agreed to go to it, and it was the most bizarre party I've ever been to. But in the Halloween party, they were actually there was actually an entity there that was communicating with somebody. I don't remember, but it was extremely bizarre. But it was probably my first connection with Pleiadians, people who actually understood the aspect of Pleiadian contact, and it was so bizarre because I really haven't read anything about that since. I've been researching somewhat over the many years about it, but it wasn't until I read this book that it really caught me. And the odd thing was is it was written in 92. Which was about the same year that I attended that party, and they were talking about Pleiadians, and I thought they were out of their minds really at the time because I really wasn't totally attuned to it, but I was very I was interested, and the odd thing was is that all of my friends at the time I invited them I had an open invitation to the party and I invited them to the party. And they all were scared of the idea. They all say, "Leo, you're out of your mind. What is this crazy stuff? It's entities and Pleiadians and whatnot." And so anyway, I wound up going to the party myself, and I saw some fascinating people, met some interesting people, and that was the first introduction I had to the Pleiadian concept. And
well, you remember Ramtha, right?
What's that?
J.J. Knight?
No, I don't.
Ramtha, who had a who was a clairvoyant?
I've never heard of one.
Ramtha.
I think I've run into that name, but oddly enough, the connection doesn't stay with me here.
All right. Well, the reason why I bring her up is that you know she was just another psychic. You know, around the same time, or before that time, but, talked about the psychic world and so forth, but she didn't really talk too much about the extraterrestrials.
Right.
where you see in the 80s or in the 90s, it like shifted. But there was a lot of stuff that included the extraterrestrials, you know, before that. But people never looked at it because it was too foreign for them.
Yeah. I you know, a very strange thing happened to me today. You know, we talk about synchronicity. And I was working with this lady, a teacher named Nora, and she read part of my book, and she came across the chapter 16, which was about metaphysics and politics. And
yes.
She read the name of, you know, I had mentioned Maria in that section, right? You also, but Maria, and she told me that she had actually had three psychic readings that told her that a person named Maria would be able to give her the answers that she was seeking. They didn't know who, they didn't say the last name of the Maria, or they didn't say who it was. They just told her that it was Maria. And one of the psychics I know well, because, and I know he's an extreme clairvoyant, and he told her this name, Maria. Well, she looked at she was reading my book, and she came across the name Maria, and you know, Maria Fix, when I wrote it.
Popped right out to her.
And it popped at her, and she asked me, she said, "This Maria Fix, I think I have to talk to this woman."
Yeah,
now this is weird. She says, "This Maria Fix," she said, I have to connect with her. And I said, "No question about it." I said, if you're looking through my book and seeing Maria, and you've had three international, not just minor psychics, but international psychics, tell her that the name Maria kept coming up to them and that she had to contact Maria. Today, she called me and she said, "Leo," and I gave her the number, Maria's number, because I saw her today, and she said, "Please give me Maria's number." And I came home and I looked up the number, and she called and I gave her the number. She called Maria, and Maria turned and the number that she called was her cell phone number, which was the Long Island extension. And it turned out that Maria was actually in Tampa, Florida, all right?
At a wedding.
At a wedding, okay. And
yes.
And Maria answered the phone, right? Answered her cell phone, all right? And,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
She must have been expecting her to call.
Yeah, and she said, Nora told her that... Dora told her that I had told her about her and about Maria, and that she was and that she wanted a reading. All right. Well, Maria,
yes.
you know Maria, she'll let her answering machines ring. She'll put you on, especially
yeah.
your cell phone. And but she picked up the cell phone and asked, and talked to her and booked a reading for her, because she said for some reason this was psychically important. Now, as far as the synchronicity of this, George, is unbelievable how these links happen for this woman Dora to be able to contact Maria. And with prior psychics telling her that somebody named Maria would have the answers for her. Now, what do you think of that? Is that bizarre or what?
Well, it's not bizarre. It doesn't surprise me, but how synchronicity, everything is synchronized together, and to be truthful, I'm surprised that she was able to just reach Maria.
I know, she answered her on her cell phone, boom.
I think Maria knew she was going to call.
I think so.
Well, yeah, you're right, Lila, but, you know, there's a reason for everything, and
That's
I'm
right.
sure there was a reason there for this.
And this particular lady had an aunt who died unexpectedly, okay,
mm-hmm.
and left her some a ring that had some kind of secret, that had some
mm-hmm.
kind of message, all right. And even though she was very close to this aunt, she died unexpectedly, and she wasn't able to be at her funeral. She just passed away, and she didn't find out until. a short while after, but she was unable to talk to her before she passed away. And she in her will, she left her this very special ring.
Well, Leo, I admire your friend's interest in this.
Well,
her intent was been fulfilled, if that's what it was. But her intent, whatever she put out, she was able to draw a very powerful thing here.
Absolutely.
And you know, she will experience, you know, what she intended to look for or to find.
That's right. And when she found that she was trying to contact her aunt, okay, who she was very close to for many years.
But that's secondary. That's secondary. You know, what she found and whatever. But you know, it's just the impact of that happening.
Absolutely.
Of connecting.
Unbelievable. And I started to think of what, you know, of Peter Moon's experiences through synchronicity, and I said, my God, and thinking of not only that happening, but other things that have happened in my own life, the synchronicity is just bizarre. And then after reading this book on the Bringers of the Dawn, and the other book on the Third Eye, those two things, those two books, just absolutely overwhelmed me with this Palladian influence. All right, and I was saying, my God, am I a Palladian? Am I actually part of this reality here? And it makes so much more sense to me. Your my own existence, my own purpose in life. Came together from the synchronicity of picking up this particular book, and then this particular book being drawn to two other people who had read this book and saw it, and both understanding it and believing that they were also a part of this cosmic force. Okay.
All right, Leo. Leo, if I could stop you for 1 minute,
sure.
And I just want you to take a look at what you just have been explaining to me.
Right.
That, you know, you're finding things or you're experiencing things, but understand these are questions that you put out there, and apparently you found an answer for whatever those questions were in this material, whatever it was.
George, is that I really never really put that answer out there.
But you did, Leo. You did.
I never thought that I really was looking for that particular answer.
Well, you have to understand that, you know, watch what you dream for, because you just may get it. And here's a situation where you did get it, but, you know, it's not as you've seen it.
Well, the thing that I understand, the thing that I'm beginning to understand more than I ever did before, was the random aspect of this synchronicity. How that, it is more random than I ever thought it was, because
you wouldn't have synchronicity if it were totally random.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know. I question constantly the connections that I make and what they mean, and I realized that with this particular one was so connected, so obviously oddly connected. Okay, but it worked. That it was beyond anything that I could ever. I couldn't have imagined this scenario. In other words, it happened in a way that I really couldn't imagine, and that my book, okay, and happened to be a conduit.
It was a vehicle.
It was a vehicle for this woman to
hook up with Maria.
Hook up with Maria.
Right.
There's no other way that this woman could have ever hooked up with this psychic, with this
phenomenon. Well, she could have listened to a show. She could.
Yeah, but no, she couldn't have because of the, I mean, three international, and I'm not talking just the minor local guys, but three international psychics, well-known psychics that, you know, and one shaman, one of them was an actual shaman that actually told her that this woman, Maria, would be the answer, where she had to speak to a Maria, all right?
Well, she'll find out whether this is
true. So it'll be amazing. It was an amazing link. But even my own linkage, my own links to you and to Maria, and of course to the great Bill Marshall and all these other links have led me to on a path that I was on, but I didn't realize. The avenue that I was actually taking until I read this book and also The Third Eye, which was a remarkable book as well.
If I can for a minute, you know, I want to go back to
they all came from Maria. From that book came from Maria's library, lent to you, and this particular book was yours, and so the synchronicity once again. Is overwhelming.
What were you going to say, George?
Yeah, I want to go back to Peter Moon.
Yeah.
And, you know, the synchronicity that we're talking about, he wrote in, his second book, I believe.
Yeah, Living, yeah. Living.
Yeah, out. Yeah. And understanding, I know Peter, and even before the books existed, we talked about this, in admiring, I think, the synchronicity in life. And in different his works and my works, and you know I'm trying to get an understanding of all this knowledge that we've had with synchronicity, how it relates to this Mayan times and so forth.
Right.
And
I believe that too, George.
What's that?
It's the time that we're in now. That all of these people, all of these spirits are connecting to one another.
Yeah. You know? Yes, but Leo, let me continue here, as I was saying. And for myself, it's been nice because I've been able to take the time that we had and what we were talking about and put it maybe into relationships with, you know, with my own life. And, you know, I'm amazed in how things have fallen into different channels and so forth.
Right.
And
right.
It's not that I question it. But, you know, it's like the synchronicity in daily life. Like, you know, it's like I know what's going to happen tomorrow. And then tomorrow I'll know, you know, what's going to happen the following day. Is because it's the same old pattern that my life has taken, you know, over years and years. And,
but,
you know,
one thing you don't know is who you're going to connect with in each day. And mm-hmm. that's the power of that synchronicity. I think it's the you have an idea and a visual of plan of what the next day will become. All right. But at the same time, there is that unusual or a unique connection that you make as you plan your day. That unique synchronicity occurs, and that's mm-hmm. what makes you understand that you're on the right path, and that your journey is one of.
What?
Of a much greater and much, much broader.
No, hogwash.
Maybe, but it's a remarkable.
You're not making a lot of sense.
Leo, let me talk.
Lila, I love Lila so much. Lila always keeps me on track.
Yeah, you're not making a lot of sense here. Go ahead, George.
Not making sense. She tells me so. So go ahead, George.
You see, that's it, that, you know, I follow a natural routine. And I know tomorrow at, let's say, 12:15, that the mail lady is going to come by and drop off my mail. I mean, you know, I could even say, I can almost predict you know, what's going to be in that mailbox. But, you know, this is just a natural occurrence that my life has taken. So, you know, I have to go back to what I believe is that, you know, I am creating this whole reality. I'm holding it together. And in the same standpoint, I am holding tomorrow's reality together by imagining, you know, it to be this way. And as that day comes, I will experience it. I will experience it in that way. And, you know, it's not letting go and letting the world show itself to me. It's how I see the world, or how I'm setting the world up to see it in my own my eyes only. And I'm babbling here, but I think, you know, it's an exercise that I am going through, because, you know, it's not expecting the unknown to happen. It's just letting it happen and not worrying about it, but enjoying, you know, enjoying what life has in store for me.
Well, I agree with you there, but I mean, half the fun is to think of what the next synchronistic connection will be, and I.
Well, you don't know
what
it'll be.
I mean, that's the point of it, Leo. I look forward to each day to see it, because I've seen so many in the recent months, and as soon as I read that book, it opened up a light to me, Peter Moon's book, that made me understand, yes, there are synchronistic aspects to your life, and things that come to you out of the blue, out of totally random, and you know, that you could never expect, that will connect you and can continue to connect you to onward and onward and onward toward your whatever you are seeking in your life, whatever your goal is, or whatever.
Well, you don't go about each
synchronicity.
It just is one of those things that happens.
It happens.
That can
yeah, yeah.
You don't think, oh, tomorrow I'm going to have five synchronistic events.
No, of course not.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
But when it happens,
what I'm talking about, if I can.
Yeah, go ahead, George.
Is throughout the day. It's like, you know, I'll be in my car on a highway, and I'll pass an open field, and I'll see a group of wild turkeys,
uh-huh.
You know, pecking for food and whatever, and you know, it's my imagination of acknowledging these birds and understand that or imagine myself among them. You're picking and flying away to another field together, you know, just being part of them. And, you know, I could understand, their life, their life's feelings. That's what I'm talking about, where instead of putting it into perspective, you know, I'm not a turkey and I can't fly and so forth, but in my mind, I can be part of them and I could be one of them. And, you know, it's like a unity consciousness, where there is no physical world other than the body or the whatever I use, you know, as a vehicle at the time.
Well, that's just shape shifting, is what it is.
No, but what I recognize in this book is what is called multidimensional realities. All right, where you're actually in the dimension that these turkeys are, or these people, you know.
Right.
Every time, and George. Finally, George, and I finally figured this thing out about the emotional aspect of what you've been talking about all these years, all right?
Okay.
After reading this book, I understand, or these two books, I understand the emotional aspect to learning, okay, and understanding. And once you understand that factor, and I'm only saying, I'm not saying this to you, but I'm just saying this to the listeners, that once you experience the emotional learning Okay.
It's the most powerful kind that you can
it's
have.
The most important and most powerful aspect of anything, because then you open up that channel and you absorb the knowledge, okay, of eons of human history.
And that's what we're missing in education.
The emotional aspect of learning. Okay.
See, but this is stuff that you already know.
Yes.
I mean, we're all sentinel beings having a human experience. Understand that.
Book about it is in your skeletal structure, all right, that actually these eons of human history, okay, are actually stored within your skeletal structure, okay?
There you go.
And that, to me, was one of the most profound statements, because I could understand that, because what do we study as archaeologists, as scientists? We study the bones. We study the calcium remains of our ancestors, of our predecessors, and they're finding that human remains and human findings go back as far as 500,000 years. Okay, in the current state that we are in, the present condition, the present physical condition, a skeletal condition that we have today, so that our ancestors, our ancestral race, okay, goes back at least 500,000 years, okay, to the creation of the Cro-Magnon, or the man that we, or the species that we are at this point, all right, which was a genetically manipulated.
So what's the point, Leon?
Well, what I'm saying is that the skeletal structure of a human being, according to these books, state that they carry the history of humanity within them. They have the living history within the bones. Okay, once the people go to the fourth dimension, once the people die, okay, they rise to a fourth dimensional state, okay, their bodies are left here, but the memory of who they are, what they are, is actually within the skeletal remains, okay? And that...
And so if they leave their body here, so what? They've gone...
You see, but...
But you can actually retrace the knowledge of that humanity through to up to 500,000 years, okay, through the skeletal remains of that person. All right, do you see what I'm saying?
Okay,
yeah.
And?
What do you mean, and?
You know
500,000 years is a considerable amount of human history and intelligence, okay?
All right, let's...
And they can...
Leo?
Through...
Leo.
No, I'm sorry, George, go ahead.
Let's move it. What you're talking about is talking about a person, a person's bones and so forth. What
right.
you're saying is true. Yes, you know, it still remains. The history of us is in our from our DNA into our bones,
right.
And so you know it is the history of us. But let me ask you something.
Right.
When you leave this earth, when is there a time where you leave everything behind, nothing is left?
Jeez, I don't know. I haven't read that far, George. But as far as I know, our remains stay here, But there is a point, and I read this, that there is a point where your actual body and soul ascend to the fourth dimension as well.
Yes, but what you have to do is that you have to end that body in a sense. Like we die, our body decomposes, but our soul, we're born back into life again, into another body. But the body itself, you know, comes and goes. But the person is not the body. The person is the soul that emanates that body.
They claim that once the silver cord is severed, all right,
right.
through the astral plane, well, you know, the cord of the astral plane and so on. But once that is severed, then your body dies. Okay, you have no way for the soul to re-enter the body. So from that, then the body dies anew, and of course the soul ascends to the fourth, fifth, and so on dimensions. In its normal evolution.
Just going to let it flow here. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, what if a person donates their heart, you know, for a heart transplant and so forth?
Right.
You know, what about the DNA? And, you know, in understanding that the donor and so forth has its own DNA, and yet there is going to be a problem with rejection. But what's being rejected is basically the character of that DNA, you know, the person the heart came from,
right?
And different than the recipient.
I think the thing that I don't know if it confounded me, but I found it to be profound in the concept was that how people not only transcend this dimension, but how they and go into the fourth dimension, but how they're how we can transcend, how we can ascend or transcend our entire physical body into the fourth.
By letting it go. See, that's the problem. You're not letting it go by having bones that's going to, you know, last for, you know, a couple hundred thousand years.
But before you die, before you actually sever that cord between here and there, you can actually create the higher vibration of your existence to transcend the third dimension, to live completely.
Right, but you still have to deal with the bones that you're going to leave behind as you're descending.
No, according to this, there are no bones. Your body transcends as well. All right?
You can
actually your body actually rises with your spirit to the fourth dimensional state, and for that. That is the be all and end all of ascension, where your actual body rises. You know, almost like the Christhood, when you reach that Christhood of where Christ's body was no longer in the tomb, okay, and for 3 days it was actually ascended, and then shortly after his body, he was seen in the full flesh, okay, reincarnated or reappeared to his disciples as a flesh and blood being, all right. But and shows that it just shows that we can take our bodies. I mean, if we are aware enough, we can transcend this third dimension with our own physical bodies, okay, into a fourth dimensional state or even higher, all right? And but yet, when we ascend to that level, we rid ourselves of all the negative aspects of our existence. In other words, disease and
I have a real problem with this. I don't see it that way.
I understand.
Well, let him just say. What's your problem, George?
You know, it's being locked, confined to this third dimension. But you said you go to the fourth dimension with your body. You're ascending with the body.
Yeah, that's what I read.
Well,
with that, because I that was unusual to me, because I kind of just thought that you would ascend, you know, you become a spiritual, you know, entity, as and leave the body behind. But there are examples that the body was actually ascended with the spirit, and in the highest
levels
of ascension. Yeah.
Right, but it's resignating a faster frequency.
Right.
Where the physical body or the physical of third dimension won't affect it.
Yeah, I understand that. And I was really floored by reading this because, yeah, I mean, I stand to be corrected, but from what I read, George, I was totally blown away, and I understand after reading the teachings of the Palladians, I totally understand now what when we discussed good and bad, evil and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I understand now from what I just read that we are there's a positive and a negative energy that we are. Both are equally powerful. Okay. Both.
Well, it's what we're using now, Leo. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But who knows in the next dimension whether we'll be there or not?
No, because
well, they won't be there.
It won't.
You
be.
See.
Yeah, leave it here, and in the next dimension, we are totally. It's the fourth dimension is considered the dimension of desire, right?
And there'll be something else to work out in that dimension in order to rise to the next one.
Well, yeah, I mean you're looking forward to the fifth dimension, Lila. I believe that Lila is a seventh dimensional creation. Come down to help us out down here.
Yeah, let's look at it in a different way. It's like living in a box.
In this book, it's seven dimensions. Is all we have. What's that?
Let's look at this as living in a box.
Right.
Yeah. We live in a third dimensional box.
Oh, we are definitely. Yeah.
So, take yourself out of that box.
Right.
And what do you have?
No box.
No, yeah. Well, you're living free, unconfined.
Right, right.
Well, maybe in a fourth dimensional box.
But in this dimension.
Well, not maybe. You are in a fourth dimensional box. But whatever you think manifests, but it's not controlled by duality.
Right.
Because we're leaving duality and light behind, including the solar system or the universe, as you understand it.
Right.
You know, once you step out of the box, there are no stars, there are no lights from the heaven. There's nothing. It's a void.
Right. But I think to preface what we're saying, so that people understand, is that the third dimensional reality that we exist in, third dimension that we exist in now, all right. Is made up of these third dimension is dependent upon time, space, continuum, time and space. All right. Once we explore the fourth dimensional reality, all right, then we go beyond time and space into the complete manifestation of our desire, because fourth dimension is stated as the dimension of desire, okay? So that.
But you don't know what that means, really.
Well, I know what it means because I've read the book, and what they're stating is that in the fourth dimension, whatever you desire, whatever you bring from the third dimension, can be created and recreated and instantaneously and become your reality. However, what happens is that whatever your desire may be in your third dimensional reality, be it your great wealth or lust or who knows what, whatever you bring with you, okay,
or the right way or the white way, not the black way.
No. But what I love about this explanation is that there is no right or wrong way. It is the way, okay? You have a negative or positive method to if you are a miser in this world, then your next world you will create for your heaven a world full of money and gold. Okay. However, once you get to that state, and once you create that desire, and once that manifests, then in the fourth dimensional state, then you get extremely bored and extremely disillusioned with that desire, and you go on from there. And that is the that's the learning state that you graduate or evolve into, right? And then from there, you know, you learn to accept love and respect and community and so on and so forth, you know, the higher levels of existence. But
Leo, if I can break in here, you know,
I'm probably going off the deep end here, but.
Well, you see, it's like, you know, I want to be a Superman, and, you know, it's like the only way to be a Superman is I have to do this and I have to do that because it is the right way to go.
Right.
And if I do that, then I'll become Superman.
Right.
But, you know, there's another way of being Superman. Is just close your eyes and think of yourself as Superman and flying, and you're Superman.
That's right. That's exactly right, George. Absolutely. That's exactly right.
So,
yeah.
You know, let's don't elaborate. I mean, you know, you can play games with this all you want. It's either you do or you don't. And, you know, if that's what you want, you know, well, anyways.
Yeah, if you want to play, Tiddlywinks, go ahead and do that. But
there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, at one.
Well, why bother when you can be Superman right away? And that is exactly right.
But you are Superman, Leo.
Superman. But in other words, what I'm saying is, instead of going through years of trying to figure out how to become Superman, all you have to do is say you are Superman, and that Superman power and that Superman concept comes immediately to you. And
well,
you
that's right, Leo.
Because you have that knowledge already within you, and all you have to do is say it, and you tap into it, and that's what these books have said to me, and it has brought me such a tremendous. Surge of, well, what they say, the power of the serpent, or the Kundalini yoga, and I've almost been afraid to do the breathing exercises that they explain in there because, you know, they say if you bring that power onto you too quickly, then you can become a complete mental case. Okay.
Oh no, that's hogwash. Listen, you know.
Okay. I kind of believe it because if you're not ready for that rush of
do what you are ready.
Well, I hope
the
so.
Only one is saying that you're not ready. Understand that you know you know this stuff already, and
you're
just rehashing
for,
it.
That the world's not ready for you. You know what I mean? And I think that's the only way you wind up in these mental institutions is because.
But the world is ready for you, Leo.
Yeah. I think so, George. I think so. I think
well,
ready. I think
that's the way things are.
Yeah, George.
I don't worry about it the way you do, Leo. You just
that's it.
That's about these things. I think we just go up and we're there, or we transform and we're there, and
yeah.
We work on some more things. It's like graduating.
You know, we all have certain purposes and synchronicities in this life. You know, some people are to be doctors, some people lawyers.
Well, see,
but, you know, understand that we all have a game to play, and the trick is enjoying and not take it personally. Because the truth is, you know, being a spirit and so forth, life only takes a few seconds. We're here and we're gone. And that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So enjoy it. Enjoy it as it happens.
I agree.
No, I'm with you here, George. Enjoy the moment.
I just want to say we got about 1 minute left of the live feed on this show, the live stream, and we're going to continue just a little longer. But I just wanted to mention to our audience that we will be going off in about 1 minute, and we have 9 seconds left remaining. So we will wish you good night, and please just tune into us in about 10 minutes or so into the archive, and you'll be able to hear the rest of the show. So we've stopped streaming. So anyway, George, what I was saying is that Lila, believe it or not, and this is what amazes me, Lila has actually grasped the whole concept of what we're talking about, because she is intuitively in tune to this knowledge, and it constantly amazes me how she's able to sense or grasp the entire without even reading the text. She's able to grasp the entire meaning of that text. All right.
Leo, what have I been talking about for the last 3 years?
The same thing, but you know.
No, you know, you rabble on, but understand, Lila knows exactly what's going on from an intuitive level.
That's
she
right.
feels it.
And I'm the idiot who has to read the damn books. You know what I mean? So it's like it takes me forever to
Lila doesn't have to. She just listens to your narration, and she gets it.
Exactly.
I'm only kidding. Maybe so. I don't know.
It's annoying as hell, to tell you the truth, George, because it takes
women think differently. Understand that, Leo, but, you know, it's accepting it for what it is. And now is the time where women's power, yay, is coming back. And, you know, maybe it's with their help, we're putting things back in order. Or getting out of this sort of business and leaving it to them.
Yeah, no, I know, but you know, that's kind of what kind of ticks me off, because I like I said, it takes me months to read this material and to absorb this stuff and be aware of it, and all I have to do is tell Lila this stuff, and she says, of course it is. That's normal. That makes sense. You know, and it's like. And like she knows before she even reads this stuff. It's like, I just wrote this book.
But the reason why, Leo, she can do that
is
that, you know, she is tapped into the source much more readily, let's say, than you think you are.
Oh,
understand, a woman is open to the world where a man is not. And this is all going back to our consciousness.
George,
our consciousness. We've been closed off to the outside world here. For almost 15,000 years or 12,000 years. And that is part of the change that's going on right now, where, you know, instead of thinking in our own heads, we're listening to the outside world and rearranging or realigning ourselves with the natural forces. And with that natural force comes the feminine quality of maintaining and actually birth. Men can't do that. But that's part of the consciousness that was changing, and we're going back to a natural flow of life instead of an artificial one. And that's what we've been under.
Yeah, but George, I have to say, honest to God, I after reading these books, I completely understand what you're saying. In the sense of the emotional knowledge that it opens up this floodgate of cosmic knowledge.
Well, then you really learn, because you're emotionally involved.
Right.
And that's what schools lack. They're strictly cognitive. And when they open up the emotional part of learning, they'll really have learning.
There you go.
They don't have it now.
There you go. Like we see this as educators, we see this daily in communicating with kids, that, and Lila especially,
they squash that part out.
The schools try to squash that element out, that emotional element.
And that's the most important quality.
And that's the emotional. That's the part that actually allows you to learn. The intellectual part is is brittle and frail. The emotional part is the strength and the solidity of that knowledge. And
well, yeah, it has something to offer. And you know, I've noticed, like this week, I was doing some work on my deck out in the at my house here, and I work with a couple of people here, and you know, it's nice to sit back and watch other people, you know, work, and specialists work in their field, and you know, with men and so forth, you know, I have an understanding of construction, you know, of engineering and so forth. But the way this one fellow worked was magic, because what he could do with angles, you know, I couldn't even do in my head. But he was able to do it in his head. And the reason why is because he was a Coast Guard man. He was a Navy man.
Wow.
And he was used to the sea, and he's used to water and something that's flowing. And in understanding men with engineering, I mean, we're linear thinkers. We're not spherical thinkers, or let spherical things part of our path. And it was nice for me just to watch somebody who had that flavoring, you know, to look at something from a spherical point of view, which is more of a natural view, and of course something that's fluid, that moves. And normal from a linear perspective, everything is rigid and straight.
Well, I'm anxious to see your liquid deck.
There you go. Well,
is that what you have? A liquid deck?
Well, you know, I think for me it was a watching something and getting an understanding of something I never really thought about. But, you know, it does have an influence. Just like a person's world, you know, affects them, not only their body but also their thinking too.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a difference in people who live, you know, in mountains, or people who live by the sea, or people who live by blah blah blah. You know, it's like you carry on those characteristics, and you know, part of the Native Americans can show us ways of changing with the environment, or living within the environment of the lands and of the place that they migrated.
Yeah, no, that's true, George. Yeah, I'm very anxious to, Lila and I are both very anxious to see your deck.
Yes.
Your new deck. Yeah, because, you know, I'm sure that it's a work of art. But you know, I appreciate this conversation tonight, George, more so than you know, because I've read these two books, and I've been floored by the information there, and you know, and far far better understand what you've been trying to tell me over these last few years, and appreciate that, and I can't wait.
Yeah, well, I think we're living in some very interesting times, and I love them, what bothers me is, you know, this situation down in the Gulf now with the soil slick.
Horrible thing, George. Horrible disaster. Horrible international disaster.
You're right, Leo. But you know, if you take a look at the other side of this, and I've talked about this, we do have available to us ways of cleaning this up. And I talked to you about the super ionized water that was talked about years ago,
right,
where you could spray this stuff over water and over oil, an oil slick, and what it would do is it would revert that oil back to its natural state. And for its natural state to begin with was basically water, and its amino acids just fish food. And, some of the technology that we have from the past is catching up with us, and we can do things like we can clean up oil in a second.
But
you spray this stuff over it, and instantaneous,
it's
gone.
The morons that are doing shit now, the stuff that they're pouring on this oil slick now is nothing more than degreaser, okay, which is polluting the ocean even worse.
Yeah, I know, Leo, and probably the people who produce this are making a lot of money in this experimentation or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying there are means available where we could take care of that problem in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, this could...
But not only that, understand, there are areas in the oceans of the world, you know, that even ships don't cross, that's heavily polluted, you know, not only with atomic fuel and so forth, but other things, you know, a lot of these chemicals.
There's actually a place in the ocean that is like a whirlpool that is and I believe it's a mile in diameter. Or more, and it goes down, is full of plastic, okay?
Yes.
Plastic containers and plastic somewhere on the in the ocean, okay, that ships have actually seen. That it's like a whirlpool of plastics, okay, of plastic stuff. And it goes way down at the bottom of the ocean, way up top, like miles.
All
the plastics seem to concentrate into this one area. All right.
Okay, let's take that thought if we can. And if, let's say, what I'm saying is real, which I know it is real, who's to say that doesn't matter, you know, what it is, other than if we focus on it enough, it will do what we want it to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like...
I think if you had a global or even national concentration on the fact, on this thing evaporating and dissipating into a neutral and negligible spill, okay, that it could be contained. But if you put enough national, if you put enough attention on this subject and put enough, direct positive consciousness toward this, then it can dissipate. It will dissipate, and it will eventually be eliminated.
Leo, but, you know, you only need a few people. Even with, you know, meditation or just a kind thought, that, you know, this can be better, or this is better, or this will be cleaned up in a matter of weeks. And that's what I feel in my heart is going to happen. In a couple weeks from now, damn it, I hope to see that thing cleaned up.
In fact,
I'm not even going to hope for it. If it's going to clean up, it's going to clean up. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
But
you know, we got to get to the bottom of this. And the more we pussyfoot around it, you know, it's going to get worse until going to really interfere with our lives.
Well, concentrated on this particular issue and trying to correct it, you have hundreds of thousands of people, you know, involved in this cleanup. But at the same time, in fact, I almost feel compelled to go to the Gulf Coast myself, physically. You know, and film this entire catastrophe just to make more real to myself what a catastrophe this horrible thing is, and see it firsthand. But
what about volcanic eruptions up in Iceland?
Well, that is still isolated, that volcanic eruption, and it's already dissipated. But we're talking.
Yeah, but understand that ash is floating up there in the atmosphere, my friend, and we're breathing that in. I don't care what you think, that, you know, we haven't seen the last of this yet. There's so much up there.
But at the same time, you know, the world has always had volcanic actions in some place or another place, but this is something that this is something man-made, this oil leak. Is man-made. I mean, volcanoes are not.
So, you know, it's still going to affect us, man-made or naturally made, you know.
They have a 200,000 gallons a day leaking into the Gulf Stream, okay, into the in 5,000 feet below sea level, okay. You know, you have this massive amount of oil, all right, leaking system, all right, and killing God knows untold numbers of life within the ocean. Okay, and this thing is supposed to be global in its context. I mean, we're talking. It may be the Gulf of Mexico, but it's 5,000 feet below, and it's right at the center of the Gulf Stream, or you know where the currents, right in the currents, and this is going to be taken into Spain. It's going to be taken into all of the Mediterranean, all of the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, everywhere. I mean, this oil spill will be seen on beaches around the world. All right. And that's the devastation that we're seeing here. And at this point in time, I mean, I don't know, George. I do know,
and I know it's going to be cleaned up, or I'm not worried too much about it.
I just feel it's another great sign of the apocalypse, the unveiling. And of course, the...
What's the apocalypse? What's the unveiling?
It's the unveiling, yeah. As it's the abuse that we've given to this planet, this mother nature.
The planet will take care of itself with or without us, so, you know.
That's true.
So
and on that note, I'm
going to
say good night because I've lost my voice again.
It's always a pleasure, dear. I wish you were more vocal, but with your voice.
Yeah,
well, next week, hopefully.
I think next week probably you'll be back by then. I don't have much of a voice in the morning, and I don't have much at night either. Sort of during the day, I have a little bit. But not
Happy Mother's Day, dear.
Okay,
well,
good night, George.
I can vouch for that. So, you know, that's true. She has been going through this viral infection of her larynx, you know, of her vocal cords, and she's been having a hell of a hard time. But nevertheless...
Leo, I think that this is part of the intervention that we're going to see. That's going to help us clean up this mess, or maybe. And this could be from an extraterrestrial origin also. You know, who knows?
Hey, it may very well be.
I think it would be nice.
That too. But, George, I can't thank you enough for lending me these books. I swear to God, they've enlightened my understanding by light years. I feel by light years, okay, of where I was prior to reading them. And I can't wait. And I've got four or five more books, okay, that I borrowed from you that I haven't gotten to yet, which will be the discussion of some of our next shows. But this particular book, the Bringing of the Dawn, Bringers of the Dawn, that one knocked me out. And also the Third Eye, how to access the Third Eye, and how to understand what we are as human beings, and what we are as these remarkable creations. And I thank you, George. I thank you for that knowledge. And I'm sure everybody who's listening, or who has listened to our many programs, has have thanked you as well. So. What do you think,
well,
George?
Leo, I tell you, I'm looking forward to bringing out a lot of those books that I have in boxes still.
I can't wait.
You know, I have so much going on here now.
I can't even imagine what treasures you have in there. You know, in your hundreds of boxes of books, but the ones that I was able to borrow from you have been extremely mind expanding and amazing, and I thank you for that. And I look forward to more great adventures of your library. But anyway.
Leo, it was years back in the 70s where there was a place up in Harlem, and it was run by a fella who used to have books where kids off the Harlem streets could come in and read.
Wow.
And they would spend hours and day just reading books.
Wow.
And they all were on the esoteric levels, talking about Egyptian pyramids and things that we weren't open to. like astrology. I was very surprised on how many kids took up astrology. It was a wonderful center. And what I tried to do over the years out on the island was to bring people, or bring my books to my friends and people who I met with.
Right.
And it was always a library. People could come take a book, read it, and bring it back in a couple of months and take another one.
Right.
But I always had that openness. And, I mean, there were some people who took books and never brought them back. But, you know, it's not my book or it's my knowledge. It's just knowledge that...
I have the same problem because my books, you know, people don't bring them back. And I've resented that over the years. But I said, you know, that maybe perhaps I'm finished with those books. And they must go on to other hands, or perhaps that person needs them more than I do. Books have magic to them. I can't explain. Books over my lifetime. I've read thousands of books over my lifetime, and every one has opened up some kind of door or some kind of memory or some kind of or enlighten me to some kind of knowledge. And I am a voracious reader. I have to read two or three books a week on a normal average, not to mention hundreds of articles for my radio shows. But I'm a voracious reader. I've always have been, and I've never stopped, and I hope I never do stop, because I gained so much from so many people and so many brilliant authors, and I always appreciated the fact that your eclectic collection, your eclectic library, has brought me a tremendous insight into
well, you know, over my years, I think, of reading and I've learned, and you know, this even goes back to the civil mind method, now they call it. But at that, there was a civil mind control that if you'd ever want to learn about something, all you have to do is pick it up and hold it and have a direct witness to it, which is true. I talked about, if you want to know about George Washington, all you got to do is look at the face on a dollar bill, and everything you need to know, with a quantum understanding, is in that picture, on that dollar bill.
That's very true.
And it's like with books.
That's
like,
very
true. I remember Jimmy Airtech's book with the Keys of Enoch and his foundation that, you know, his one book, I think, took me 3 years to go through.
Wow.
And it's reading word for word and so forth that, I turn off that emotional aspect of what I'm reading, and what I have to do is sit back and absorb the emotional response, and make a long story short, it's a lot easier to take the book to bed with me, and in the middle of the night, the information that's in the book is in my head or in my energy fields. So it's a lot easier for me to tap into that, and
right.
That it, you know, all goes into you know, a different category of.
And there's another aspect too that I know that you also do, but to me, there's an intuitive aspect to every book that you read. There's something attracts you to the specific book, or something draws you to it, or in my case. Yeah, I just got another book today, a 700-page book for somebody, an author who wants to be interviewed on my show. But I find myself almost able to absorb these books now, in almost in a quantum leap,
yeah.
You know, as opposed to. years before. I mean, you'd go through a book word by word, thought by thought, and have to disseminate this information into your mind. But over the many years, I found myself being able to not only speed read in that sense, but more so absorb the emotional or the intuitive aspect of the book over the intellectual aspect of the book, and find myself quite content with the acquisition of that whatever knowledge it was that was in that book. And so depending more so on the intuitive and emotional response to a book, to a work like this, I find I can not only grab it faster, but grab it, grab the full comprehension of it, even without reading every, the last 250,000th word, So that's something that's I've created over the many years to be able to grasp that. But I do have to bring back the fact that those last two books that I read with you for your books, The Bringing of the Dawn, Bringers of the Dawn, and the Finding of the Third Eye, those two books have been tremendous catalysts to unleashing discovering or opening the levels of knowledge that are there, that they talk about, and how to access them from the intuitive level. And it's been a remarkable journey for me the last couple of weeks that I've been working on these books. So thank you again, George, for having those.
There you go, Leo.
Yeah. No, they've created it. If anything, they've brought me to a higher vibrational frequency, a higher vibrational level, and an appreciation of the of what they're talking about. And 4 or 5 years ago,
I don't need books to do that.
I don't think I could have gotten into these books even 3 or 4 years ago. They might have been too obscure. But
I said, Leo, you already know that stuff, and this last week or so, I've been drawn towards Bruce Lipton's work with DNA.
Okay.
And it's funny, when I first exposed to his work, it's like it was fantastic. I knew it, and it's just remembering things I already knew. And as his materials came out, his VCRs, I remember. Different workshops that he was giving across the country, and I would review them and listen to them and so forth. And I'm just reviewing stuff that I already know before even meeting this fella or even the materials. It's like I know this stuff, so it's just I'm just touching base with things that I already know. And it's not that I'm a biologist, that's for sure. I'm not, or an engineer. Other than I understand the concepts, the precepts, and it's a lot easier for me to follow these things through and see them manifest.
I agree with you, George. And on that note, I think we should probably end the show. But I wanted to thank you again, and sorry we got started a little late here tonight. And you're right on, George.
Okay, well, look at. I'll keep in touch, and in a couple of weeks, I like to talk about the midpoint of the sixth night that we're in with the Mayan calendar. How's that?
That sounds real good. We'll bring everybody up to date on what's going on. So from there.
Yeah, but I think it's also focusing in on the second half of this year, and we talk about this oil slick and so forth and the volcanic activity. Let's take a look at the rest of the year and see what's in store for us.
Yeah, and the collapse of the existing systems that we are aware of, and I think that would be a good topic. So thanks, George, for being with us tonight, and as always, we appreciate you more than
you. All right, Leo, God be with you, my friend. Thank you.
All right, Phil. Good night. And everybody, we wish you a good night, Lila and I. And thank you for joining us. And we hope you'll join us again next week, Wednesday, Thursday, and the following week, and Friday. So good night, and have a good weekend.